The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
You're very welcome to the debrief. We're going to look back at some of the big stories of the week. And today I'm joined in the studio by Chief Economist with the Institute of International and European Affairs and columnist with thecurrency.ie, Dan O'Brien. Author and journalist Cailin Hogan is here with us, and Chief Commissioner of the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission, Liam Herrick. Thank you for being with us on this beautiful Friday. Well, we're going to talk about income tax, just in case people feel too great about the weather, because it does seem, and all of the headlines told us, that Fianna Fáil and Jack Chambers are very much in favour now of an income tax cut in the budget. And I think that surprised a lot of people, given the couple of weeks that we have had and what's happening internationally, that there might be scope for income taxes beyond indexation in the budget. Cailin, I might start with you on that one. Do you think that it is the right thing to do?
I mean, I think the government's only able to do this because of this massive surplus they have. And I know at least one private landlord who's very happy about the idea of income tax cuts. And we've seen in recent weeks, Ireland's biggest corporate landlord, you know, thrilled about the rent reforms and the new profits they say they're going to be making. I think the question for me is always, you know, who is this government serving? And this week we've seen a report that the rate of children in residential care has doubled in 2 years. I think we are repeating those systemic injustices. This Sunday, there'll be a protest in Bessborough by survivors of the religious-run institutions against a private developer trying to build on grounds where there are likely hundreds of children buried in an unmarked grave. So again, I think profit is always prioritised by this government.
But income tax cuts would surely benefit people who are on all sorts of incomes.
It will. And I'm sure, you know, it could be quite popular. But I think, you know, will it actually address the systemic inequality in this country? I think we have this unprecedented wealth and a government boasting about it, but people not really seeing the benefits. And I think that's creating a real social divide. Mm-hmm. And people most vulnerable in this country not, you know, getting more support. They're not really seeing that wealth at all. People really
struggling.
But is
that not why the government would do this? Because of that perceived inequality and because people don't see the benefit of the surplus, which we're now told will be at 9 billion.
Well, there are a lot of reports that say that our tax system actually prevents more income inequality in this country. And, you know, what about a real tax on vacant properties and enforcing that to address the housing crisis? You know, that is one of the reasons that people are really struggling to survive, the cost of rents. And yet we see this government's reforms, you know, in some ways benefiting corporate landlords, mm-hmm. benefiting, you know, people making vast profits off homes. And, you know, we have thousands of homes remaining empty in this country during a housing
crisis. Liam, I'll come to you on this because there is a perception that this has been mooted to sort of address what happened with the fuel protests, this perception that people aren't feeling the benefit of how well Ireland is doing economically. Do you see that as being a logical way to go?
Tax cuts are always going to be popular at a superficial level. I mean, I was just reading during the week about in the States now there seems to be a race to the bottom, even from the Democrats, and trying to almost abolish income tax in some parts. But there's a contradiction, I think, between this talk about income tax coming from Jack Chamber and on the other hand, the Taoiseach making comments yesterday about structured financial help and targeted interventions for those that are most affected. I mean, from our perspective, when we do surveys of the public on human rights and equality issues, cost of living is the number one concern for people. But the evidence would seem to be the targeted interventions to those that are most in need, things like targeted welfare provisions, housing assistance, if they're well designed and evidence based, mm-hmm. they're more effective in terms of addressing the more acute needs. Now, we need a fair tax system and it's always an ongoing debate. I think the other concern at the moment, though, is that we've moved now from kind of the credible space that we were in, where you've balanced medium-term discussions about tax versus spend, to kind of really reactive steps now. Obviously, the response to the fuel protests, even before that, the hospitality VAT measure, there's a bit of a sense that the government isn't now being sensible and planning medium-term and doing it on the fly. And that really is bringing us into a much more unstable space. So you'd wonder about whether this is the most effective way to be going about it. But the discourse now as well is becoming more confused.
Yeah.
Jack Chambers saying Fianna Fáil and Éireann Féin are attacked. On the other hand, the Taoiseach is saying something which mm-hmm. I think is quite different.
Yeah, we had Éan Uirdan on earlier this morning saying that those who shout the loudest, and he mentioned the VAT cut and he mentioned the protesters as well, that they are getting what is available. But it seems as though alongside those reactive spends, we will have income tax being cut as well. Dan, the right thing to do? The wrong thing to do? What's your view?
18 years ago, Claire, personal taxes soared because we were in a serious crisis. That's fine. Have they ever been restored? No way. Mm-hmm. Has public pay been restored? Long ago. The American Tax Foundation finds that Ireland has the second most punitive system of personal taxation in the rich world. Let me just give an example.
Is that not for higher earners, though?
No,
or is that across the board?
People
on the lowest incomes don't pay income tax.
Okay, so it ranks the whole system in terms of how it evaluates uh-huh. how punitive systems are. But you're absolutely right. We've got a very unusual system here in Ireland that if you're on, say, 25, 30 grand, you pay almost no tax. But here's the kicker. After every euro you earn after 44,000, the government takes more of it than you do. So anybody who gets a bonus, who's on 44 plus, government takes more of it than the person who actually earns the money. If you're a business person and you're taking another contract, or you're taking on more work, you know that the government is going to take more of it than you do. Now, 18 years of that, the only thing that surprises me is we haven't had protests demanding tax restoration many, many years ago, because there has been the money has been there to do it. The government spending is out of control. They don't get good value for money. People are paying all this tax. And what are they getting in return for it? They're finding mm-hmm. government just spends.
We get messages about the USC all the time because people were told that the USC was a temporary measure. Now, it was two things wrapped into one at the time, and then there was another bit thrown on top of it. And we are still living with it. It brings in 5 billion. What you're talking about, though, is the higher rate of income tax, isn't it?
Basically, whether it's PRSI, whether it's USC, whether it's income tax, they're just different names. They're all exactly the same thing. They are personal taxation. So people sort of fixating on USC, they really don't matter. The point is that once you get to 44,000, every single euro you earn over that, if you're a single person, the government is taking more of it than you get to keep. Now, in my view, that is absolutely an abomination. It was something that was brought in 18 years ago as an emergency measure.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of increased expenditure the government has put in place over those years is staggering, highest in Europe. And we are still being taxed in a way that, you know, for people on just 44,000, very average income, very few countries in the world have a system where they take more than half of your money. In Ireland, we're having it at average incomes. It's insane.
Liam, do you want to come in there?
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, we were told that the reason we ended up in the crisis 20 years ago was because we had too narrow a tax base. And, you know, talking about focusing only on income tax to reduce it, I don't see the government coming forward with alternatives. You know, there's no real measures in terms of wealth tax. We know that the corporate tax income is unstable and we need to pivot away from it. So if we want to have the discussion that Dan wants to have about reducing income tax, how are we going to have a broader tax base? Now, I defer to Dan's expertise on this, but, you know, we're looking at it from the perspective that we are one of the wealthiest countries in the world in terms of overall wealth, but we have chronic problems of lack of investment in infrastructure, and we've extreme poverty in certain parts of our society, very targeted parts. We've problems with child poverty, we've chronic problems for people with disability, for example. And we have, you know, real difficulties in parts of our cities in providing people being continuing education and so on. So, look, I mean, I think we can have a balanced discussion.
Distribution, isn't it? And
yeah.
sensible spending
yeah.
as opposed to the tax take. Are you saying that if there is a tax cut at that level, as Dan describes, you have to replace it with something?
Well, we have to broaden the tax base. I mean, I thought that was, we all agreed on that. But there's no real enthusiasm
Broadening the tax base is the number of taxes you have, the number of people who pay. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the amount people pay for every additional income euro they earn, that the government is taking more of it than they do. And that is profoundly unfair in my view.
But if we were to reduce income tax at the higher rate or into the bands, that money has to be replaced from somewhere.
Yeah, listen to the fiscal watchdog. Every year, the government is spending more than it promises. It keeps ramping up spending, not just more than it should, but then there are budget overruns then during the year. If the government got its spending under control, it could give more, allow people to keep more of their own money.
I think we have one of the biggest divides in Europe between lowest earners and highest earners in this country. And there has to be a way to address that.
That's not true.
I think it is. I was looking at research yesterday.
I'll post
and, you know, I think it's an abomination that we have thousands of children homeless in this country when we have a huge surplus and unprecedented wealth. And, you know, I make under 30 grand. I pay some amount of tax for sure. But, you know, how do we address that inequality? You have people
Ireland
making
one of the
huge
lowest
numbers of money
of
in this country
in the world.
And people who are struggling to keep a roof over their heads. So there has to be a way to address that and to equalise that some way in our society.
I mean, we see this. I mean, the reality of child homelessness in Ireland is a real thing. I mean, these are real people. It does exist. I think, you know, if you wanted to have the conversation about spending, you know, I run a statutory body. I think there are two problems with public spending. For most of people in the public sector and most public sector bodies, the system now around estimates and budgets is incredibly detailed. It's very thorough. It's very careful about every penny that you spend. And then on the other hand, there seems to be decisions that are made outside of the rules. So, for example, the response to the fuel protests,
yeah,
but also large infrastructure projects.
So you know all the boxes you have to tick in your daily life, and then you see a half a billion package signed off on a Sunday night.
And if spending doesn't come in exactly on budget, there are penalties and there are real repercussions. But there are other parts then where that's not followed through. And I think that's the difficulty. It's not that public sector spending generally is problematic. There are some areas where it's very tightly marshalled and there are other areas where it isn't. And I think that's a real question for the governance and the rules within the system. Mm-hmm. What's happened over the last couple of weeks, I think, has undermined credibility and public trust. If, you know, for example, Owen Reedy from the Congress is saying that, you know, we've been told to go through negotiations, go through a public pay process where there's going to be discussions about small percentage increases. And then we see 750 million pulled out of nowhere because people
shut
the country down for a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a valid point.
How do you have a reasoned adult conversation about public sector pay on one hand for people who really need it and the cost of living is going up when you see a massive gesture towards one sector because they shut down the country?
Dan?
Well, just the final thing to say, you know, we've been with this for 18 years. The sort of arguments that are being made here is that until we reach utopia, then we can have no tax cuts. So which is, we'll never have tax cuts. That's effectively the argument my fellow panellists are making. And I just don't agree with that. We are extremely highly taxed in this country at very low levels of income relative to other countries. That was supposed to be an emergency measure 18 years ago. It needs to be restored to where taxes were in 07.
Do you need to then replace that money from somewhere else?
You get government spending under control. Less spending and more tax cuts.
Mm-hmm. So stop doing a half a billion package on a Sunday night.
And keeping, you know, the health sector, every year public spending on health not only is increased, but runs over budget. It's almost just an annual occurrence now. The government needs to get serious. Listen to what the fiscal watchdog that was set up after the last crisis back in 18 years ago, and it constantly is telling the government you're not sticking by your own spending rules.
The state of our hospitals, the state of our public services, and you want to see less spending on public services for people
who
are struggling to get good health care, to get, you know, education, childcare for their children, and you want less investment in public services and more relief for people making, to be fair, very high amounts of money.
Average
in this
income
country,
is not
when
high. How can average
a
income
lot
be
of
high?
People are struggling in this country just to live. And to be fair, with the protests, there was, you know, a majority of people in this country supported the protests because they felt that struggle to survive. Even when there's talk of great wealth in this country, people struggling to heat their homes, put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads. I think there's a huge divide in this country and it's completely eroding trust in our political institutions, and it's opened up space for far-right rhetoric as well to come in and for extreme fringe parties to really gain a footing in this country because of that complete lack of understanding of what most people in this country are going through, just struggling to
live. I think
live.
A lot of people though, Caelan, when they look at what we spend on our public services and they look at what we're getting back, would want to see that money, that huge investment being managed properly and spent in the right way. We
Absolutely.
Would share that ambition, I think, most
Absolutely.
Of us.
And I think we have to question that exactly. I don't think this government and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have been putting that money in the right place. I mean, look at the money wasted on a printer that didn't even fit in the room in government buildings. So there's no question that money has been wasted. But then that's a question of political policy and what our political priorities should be and who this government is really investing money in.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's also about leadership and politicians willing to say the hard things at times as well that people don't want to hear. I mean, you know, there were certain sectors that were really badly affected by the sharp increase in diesel. And, you know, the response to that was to give tax cuts. But if this is a prolonged crisis, we're going to have hard conversations about how we reduce demand on fuels, because obviously the government can't do this on an ongoing basis. And that means about investment in alternatives. And it might mean small sectoral supports from time to time for industries that are affected. But I mean, we aren't having those hard conversations. We're having the lowest common denominator, which is either throwing money at things in a random, it seems quite random way, or perhaps then also looking for scapegoats. And I mean, you know, there is a divisive discourse coming about and certain comments this week, urban versus rural and all the rest of it. That's not very helpful either. There's just a bit of a sense at the moment that the government isn't really showing leadership on this and is moving from that medium-term plan.
Do you want to have one last word on this, Dan?
Just one last point. That, you know, if the government is taking more of your money than you get to keep, then people clearly are not less interested in a bonus, less interested in working overtime. People who are working themselves will take on fewer things and have more leisure time. So you cut the tax, people have more incentive to work. Some of it, at least, will pay for itself.
I can't wait to make more money than they get to keep, or less money than they get to keep. That'd be great, you know.
Let's move on, because another impact we were talking about today of the crisis in the Middle East is rising costs, and in particular in the arts sector. But before the crisis, we had people saying, look, these tickets for the big gigs are just gone to a place where they are out of reach. Do you agree, Caelan, that we're pricing people out of the arts?
Hugely, yeah. I mean, there was just a court case, or the US jury just found that Ticketmaster was responsible for illegal monopolies that were, you know, taking advantage of fans and artists. And it's interesting that this story is coming when artists around the country are applying for the basic income for the arts scheme, which is only going to help a fraction of artists, only 2,000 out of probably more than 8,000 artists who will apply for it in this country. But the research, I was on the pilot, and it showed that artists are facing extreme like financial precarity in this country. It's affecting their well-being, it's affecting their mental health. And the basic income did show that for every euro spent supporting artists, society made back €1.39. But for some reason, despite all that and the great international press that the government's getting for this, they decided not to expand it beyond 2,000 artists. Mm-hmm. So a tiny fraction of people.
But for the people who aren't working in the arts world, when they want to go to a gig, you know, and it doesn't have to be a headliner gig, they're paying a lot of money for their tickets.
Hugely. I mean, friends of mine were trying to get Strokes tickets recently, and, you know, one person was having to pay over €200, another managed to get them for 80, you know, and just because of the algorithms are working. I know the EU Commission is looking into dynamic pricing through, I think, a digital fairness act. So this is being considered by the EU Commission. And like I said, you know, Ticketmaster has been found to be operating sort of an illegal monopoly. And again, you know, the profits for this are going to a big corporation.
That was a case in the United States. Is there a problem with overpricing at gigs, Liam? Any experience of this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, from a free market perspective, I mean, it does seem competition law and monopolies are a real issue here. You know, you have had a massive concentration for the large acts of ticketing. And, you know, there have been tokenistic kind of gestures at price transparency and all the rest of it. I mean, the measures that were there to stop touting have, it seems, resulted in a situation where the large ticket distributors are effectively doing the touting themselves. I mean, friends who bought tickets for the World Cup before we didn't qualify and have had great difficulty dealing with FIFA and trying to sell them on. But I mean, the way that FIFA's behaved around the World Cup is absolutely outrageous, you know, and the prices that have been charged. So there's a real problem there.
Yeah, there was international outcry over the price of the World Cup tickets. Yeah. Then you have the Ryder Cup, €499 a day to go and watch it. Plenty will pay it, but it does rule out an awful lot of people.
Well, look, the one thing that struck me with the Ryder Cup piece, I mean, you can argue if golf is culture, if golf is even sport, but I mean...
That's a whole other day.
Yeah, like, you know, I was down at Thurles last week, the hurling. You can get in for 20 or 30 quid. League of Ireland's great value. International football's great value. Ryder Cup is a different ball game. But the real question for me, talking about public spending, is, you know, how much have we spent to bring the Ryder Cup to Ireland? And what are we really getting back for it? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's the same applies for the Irish Open. The same applies for the NFL. That, you know, a lot of the time, the state is bankrolling these events. Like in Adair, we're building a motorway, a bypass around Adair. We're accelerating it, you know, to make it for the Ryder Cup, whereas there's infrastructure projects all over the Buttevant and Charlotte that are waiting 20 years.
Peter,
you know, I mean,
Peter Aiken was talking about this. He's in the Examiner this morning, and he said it drives him mad when people say, look at the economic benefit that such and such an event brings to the country. Because for him, he says it's all about joy. Think about the joy.
Well, joy is great, like, but I mean, you know, in terms of jobs...
You don't think the government should spend on joy?
I think that there's made up numbers around the benefits of some of these things. Mm-hmm. You know, if we want to have a real conversation about the benefits or not, like the NFL last year, great occasion and all the rest of it, but the state paid an awful lot to a big multinational corporation to bring it in. And the numbers about the dividend seemed fairly flaky about hotel beds and spend and all the rest of it. Look, events do have some benefits, but I think we need to look at it more carefully. And we really should be having a look when we come to the Irish Open and Trump Doon Beg in September. You know, what's the benefit? In a place, for example, there's very few hotel beds. So where are people going to stay, you know, and all of that? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think the Ryder Cup piece, we were sold a bit of a pup. And now people are beginning to wonder if these people are profiteering at 500 quid a day to watch people playing golf. Well, yeah. What was it all really about in the first place, you know?
Dan, what do you think? I mean, on the wider question of gig prices, are they too high? Are they out of reach for a lot of people? But also, and Liam has raised it there, will we sold a pup with the Ryder Cup?
I don't have views on the Ryder Cup, to be honest, Claire. I'm not a golfer. And on the ticket pricing thing, this is a rich world problem. You know, look, if people want to pay 500 quid for a day of golf and they have the money, that's their business. The market will clear. I don't think there's really a problem here. I do think there could be an issue around monopolization of ticketing in terms of Ticketmaster. That could be a public policy issue. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, look, if somebody wants to pay 100 quid to go to a gig, it'll fill out. You know, the market's doing its job there.
Listen, before we close, we had a great conversation on the show about seagulls during the week. Huge reaction, because in Galway, at the Galway Clinic, there's a warning for patients who are arriving because they're attacking people getting out of their cars. And then we heard from Dunleary that they're stealing sandwiches out of people's hands. So should we call them? Dan?
Absolutely. And what totally changed my view on it was when my daughter was attacked by one of them with an ice cream. You know, she's 5 today as it happens. She's a young child.
Happy birthday to her.
Traumatizing. You know, I'm all in favor of maintaining wildlife, but it's the sheer numbers. There are far too many.
Yeah,
they're ripping bins apart.
Well.
They're attacking people. We just need to have a proportionate number. And I don't think it's disproportionate in any way to cull animals that are creating so many problems and attacking people at worst.
Liam, we're out of time. Do you agree?
Look, I think the issue in Dublin, I don't know about Galway, but in Dublin, is we still have people doing waste through bags left on the streets.
Oh yeah, I saw it this morning.
Not only are the seagulls now the size of small turkeys, they also have worked out how to open bags, you know? So like, it's a simple thing for Dublin City Council, is just stop the idea of rubbish bags being left on the streets, and then I think you deal with the seagull problem.
People could stop feeding them as well. That would be a great idea. Liam Herrick and Cailin Hogan and Dan O'Brien, thank you all very much. Thank you very much for listening.
The Claire Byrne Show with Aviva Insurance. Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.